Blog Talk Radio.
Paranexus Universe, everybody. Today is Thursday, May 14th, 2009. This is your host, Doug Kelly. I'm here with Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Yes, and we have our special guest with us tonight, Brad Steiger. We're going to bring him on in just a moment as we get into our show. If you'd like to join us in the chat room, please do so. We'll take your questions there. And if you have a question during the program, you're more than welcome to call in. I will post the number there in the chat room. It is 347-945-7799. And of course, if you are have a headset, you can use your click to talk button on the screen there, and we can take the call that way. Just a couple of opening comments. We have some exciting news that I've been sending out in some emails. Not sure if everybody's getting those or not, but I wanted to let you know what we've been working on and what we basically opened up here. And so one of the first things I'd like to mention is that we've been working on different things to add value to Paranexus memberships for a long time. And one of the things that we just added is website hosting, in other words, a website. And so with all Paranexus paid memberships, you get a website included. And this is not just some hokey website. It's not ad-supported. It's a real one. And you get a real control panel. And if you're used to doing your own website already, you'll quickly appreciate that it's the real thing, which includes email addresses and a lot of features. So take a look at paranexus.org for information on that. You can also get information in the Join Paranexus if you're not already a member and find out everything there is to know about that. If you are a Paranexus member and you want to go take advantage of it, because it's included in your membership, if you're a certified, non-certified member, or consultant or staff member, you can go directly to paranexus.net, not .org, but .net, and sign up there. We've also opened up the Paranexus Registry of Anomalous Events, which we've been working on for months, Mike Jones and I. And it's all opened up. You can go and you can submit reports right now. Of course, we're deploying this in different phases, so the first phase is complete. We've written this from the ground up and linked it or bridged it to our forum, so you don't have to sign in again. And that means that the CPFI program is also available now, the Certified Paranexus Field Investigator. And we've been talking about this, and you can now go and apply as long as you are a certified member. But all the information is there in the registry. Everything's right there on paranexus.org. A couple of other things that we have brought on. Some of you probably realize that parazonetv.com has been offline. Our server had a big breakdown with the server and lost everything, and we had to scramble, but it took us some time to get it back together. So ParazoneTV.com is back online. And just a week or two ago, we introduced ParaBids.com, online auction. So if you sell online in eBay, you're going to love the fees because they're virtually nothing. And through the end of the month, anybody selling is can list it for free, and you get a $7 credit when you sign up. So all of these different things are value added to Paranexus members, and we warmly invite you to come and take a look at all the different things that are included in memberships nowadays. So I wanted to mention that. Hopefully I haven't forgotten anything. One other thing I guess I did forget was the Paranexus Parapedia, which Kevin Costa is administering. That's a new, and it's really designed to be a meaningful and credible resource for researchers. So take a look at that, too. All right. Without any further ado, tonight we have with us Brad Steiger, who, as I was telling him earlier, has been around a year or two and had a book or two, and we are honored to have him with us tonight. Brad, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Thank you. It's great to be with you guys.
So
nice to have you.
Looks like you're busy from everything you're reading off there. All the plans you have, that's great.
Well, we're trying to make Paranexus a credible professional research association that gives value back to its members. You know, it's a place to share and network, and that's what we're all about. We don't do competition, we share, and we're trying to build that and get people involved. So that's what that's about. And just, you know, for those who may not be familiar with your work, Brad, right now, how many books do you have published so far?
Right now, 170, and that'd be a number.
That's one or two more than I got. That's amazing. I mean, it's truly amazing.
A lot of the older books are going to be republished this year, too, so that'll boom.
And how many million in print?
Well, that's hard to tell. They don't like to release figures anymore the way they
used. Yeah, I'm sure they don't.
Talking about publishers. but counting from about 1969, when I knew how many there were, and then some people I've seen in print, some people say I've written 40 million or 50 million or 60 million. But I think we can safely say right around 17 million in print anyway.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Now, of course, it's a variety of topics, but you've done quite a lot in the paranormal field.
Almost all in the paranormal field.
In some fashion.
Almost all, except some crime, true crime, and then for the Olympics when Jim Thorpe, the great Olympic athlete, the Native American athlete,
mm-hmm.
got his medal back. I wrote his biography and went to the Olympics and was with his family when the medals were awarded that he'd won at the turn of the last century. So almost all of them have been in the paranormal field, yes.
That's amazing. So, you know, what got you started on this topic and writing like you do? I mean, as a writer myself and knowing what goes into writing and producing books, I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment. I mean, I commend you, 170 books. Holy mackerel. You know, maybe someday when I grow up, I'll even get half that. But what got you started?
Well, see, when I grew up in what one would commonly call a haunted house. And when my sister and I would see the figures moving around at night, you know, at first the little kids are kind of frightened by people walking out of the walls and back and forth and staring at us. But they never seem to hurt us, though both my sister and I are insomniacs, so that may have influenced us. Because it's you know, you say, well, am I just going to get to sleep? And then here they are. But they never harmed us, so I thought, you know, I want to tell people about this someday. And my great goal, I was going to be a great fiction writer, a short story writer. Hmm. And just when everyone would say, oh, Brad Steiger, you told us all these fiction stories, what do you really believe? That is the point when I'd say, aha. These have not been fiction. They have been true. I really believe in this. It didn't happen that way. What happened, of course, is they brought me to New York City to write the biography, finish the biography of Rudolph Valentino, the great
author.
And that was made into a movie, which you may have seen. Ken Russell did the movie. Gary Ebb was in it. So while I was finishing that, editors, my agent said, some people said, oh, I've been having this dream, and some people had other experiences. And my agent says, well, Brad really digs all that stuff. He's really into all that stuff. Ask him. And then I remember one night at a cocktail party, it went on for like 4 hours after it was supposed to end, because I'm listening to dreams, I'm hearing people. These are editors now. These are editors and well-placed people in the publishing world. So when I went home, when I went back to Iowa, mm-hmm. I had 6 contracts to write books about the paranormal. Wow. So at age 30, even though I'd started writing when I was 15, then I was writing detective stories, mystery stories, and doing articles. At 30 then, I suddenly had all these contracts on the paranormal, and that's where I've been ever since.
Wow. That's amazing. So you've had these experiences when you were a child, right?
Right.
Have they continued?
Oh, yes.
More.
Well, it is. It's interesting. I think. I guess they kind of followed me wherever I go, and then I'm married to a woman who, even though she would resist, she would not. She is an ordained minister, and so she would not accept. But she, if she wished, she could be an incredible medium. But she will not enter that particular path. But the two of us together we attract. We're like magnets. People have often said to us, you two, you attract them. Why is it wherever you go, you know, ghosts appear or whatever?
Heard too.
Some people just attract, you know, because ghosts just like us, I guess. But it's not like ghost whisperer.
Right.
They don't talk. They don't appear in that way. It's psychically, telepathically, it's intuitively. Yes, we may see the image. Yes, we may hear, but it's not, you know, direct conversation where they, in that sense. I mean, that's exaggerated. Jimmy Von Prague, you know, even though he is a fine medium himself, he's exaggerated that for dramatic purposes.
Oh, yeah.
How would you say, Brad, how would you contrast how things were when you were a child? And obviously you've matured a great deal since then and had a lot more experiences. But would you say, how would you characterize your relationship with them now? In the sense, like, do they just drop in?
Well, it depends. You know, just in the regular, in our home, it's more mischievous things.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, and then we have to say, cut it out, bring it back. And, you know, it's just having fun. I think that's left over from childhood. If we go as we might, and we're set up, you know, like this is a particular hotel, but no one tells us that this room is haunted, you know, that type of thing. And then, of course, when we're actually doing investigations, which we don't do that much anymore, then, of course, we go with an actual purpose in mind. We've done research on the place. We know the history of the place. We know what has occurred. We usually would ask there'd be no children involved. There'd be no children present at the time. And just kind of work one-on-one with the people being afflicted.
Mm-hmm. In all your years...
It's different now. I think, you know, it's very difficult to explain the way it is. You know, the people that... some I've seen since earliest childhood, and they still appear, and then others just seem to be passing through.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you perceive them?
I'm sorry? How do I perceive?
How do you perceive? How do they appear to you? How do you see them or know that they're there?
Just as if actual just as if I were sitting with you guys.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, Camille in the chat room, who's also a Parent Nexus staff member, has a question. She's sensitive herself. She says, I would like to know how he differentiates between imagination and outside elements. Is there a fine line for him or a clear difference in source?
You know, we could talk an entire program about that.
Okay.
First of all, you know, there's nothing wrong with imagination. It's one of the greatest gifts that the Great Spirit has given us, to be able to image things. But we have to caution people, you know, when they are imaging things that really aren't there. First of all, because of my childhood experiences, I grew up to love the rational just as much as anyone, to appreciate gadgets and all the wonderful things science gave us, and just looked upon these, which I do, as individual mystical experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So when I began as a researcher, I had pretty much explained for my benefit that what most people were seeing, including myself, were residues, were psychic residues.
Hmm.
In other words, somehow an idea is impressed, generally with great emotion, sorrow, sometimes happiness is impressed on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone of the proper telepathic affinity enters and sees that object, sees that person, but you can't interact with that kind of ghost any more than you can interact with the images on television. So I had pretty much, because I was now a college graduate and I was teaching in college, and I was a man of a contemporary man of science and so forth, I had pretty much convinced myself that most of the things I've seen were psychic residue. And when we were called to investigate, that's all over the U.S. of A., I would pretty much explain it as psychic residue. But it was when I encountered an actual intelligence that I angered with my arrogance and my snotty intelligence that just lifted myself and my entire team into the air and then dropped us, smashed down the door to get to us. And then I realized there isn't just one explanation for what we call generically ghosts.
You were physically...
We're dealing with many different aspects, and that's why in Shadow World, Beyond Shadow World, I hate categorizing, but I think as humans, we just do that naturally. We have to say, this is one kind of ghost, this is another type, this is a spirit, this is a phantom, this is psychic residue. So I think research becomes very complicated, and we can't be dogmatic. We can't give any one explanation for what is this and what is that and why is that. We have to be open. We're still learning. We're still very much learning.
You're right.
And the phenomenon is so diverse, and it can be, and it has so many different characteristics, like you point out, that it, you know, it's going to take us a while, a long time yet, maybe, to really put our finger on what's going on.
Exactly.
So you're telling me that you guys were physically picked up?
You never forget the experience, Doug. You never forget.
Well, I'll bet. Yeah,
this was a bad house. This was a house where 6 murders had taken place.
Hmm.
And they were copycats, one of the other. This was a house where a man, for whatever reason, we don't know now, literally blew his wife in half with a 12-gauge shotgun. This happened in the basement. The house, understandably, sat vacant for many years.
Yeah.
The next couple moved in, same thing happened, but in the garage.
Oh, no.
Third couple moved in, same thing happened, but it happened in the same room in the basement. The house sat empty for I don't know how many years. The police investigated some complaints once, and they found a transient on the basement stairs, seemingly with his heart cut out.
Holy mackerel.
So
you're saying six
why someone decided, a woman, a single mom, who had no choice and had two children, moved into the house because she had no choice. That was the only place that seemed to be open to her in this town. And then we began to hear, and we heard from police officers, and we heard from other investigators, what type of phenomena was going on there. And that's when we were called to investigate. I've been to other houses where there was violent, haunting phenomena, but nothing like this. Nothing like
what, this. What was going on in terms of what did you do? You said you kind of provoked it. What happened, Brad?
Well, see, I went in because... you know, I was 30 years old and I knew everything. and I had said, in spite of the fact, I'm in the murder room in the basement. Okay, there was a face on the wall. I don't know how that got there, but, you know, face in the concrete. It almost looked like a Hollywood production number. If you turn the faucet, what would appear to be blood, which may have been rust, but blood would appear to run out. And I was in the murder room, and this was an old house. And the basement had obviously, the basement floor had obviously just been dirt at one time, and then someone poured concrete over it, but it was very, very rough. So in order for the door to the murder room to close, it had to be pushed over a rise of concrete. In other words, you couldn't just shut it. You had to push it over. So while I was in the murder room, I saw the door beginning to close. And it would actually push itself over this ridge to try to lock me in.
Wow.
My team, which was composed, my best buddy then was a former ranger, a rough, tough guy, and another couple 200-pounders kept the door from closing on me until I'd finished investigating. Then, when I went out, I said very arrogantly, okay, if the blankety-blank thing wants the blankety-blank door, close it and lock it. They did that. We walked up the stairs. We had barely been up the stairs when there was this huge explosion. The door was knocked off its hinges, and we heard what sounded like King Kong coming up the steps, and then we were all lifted into the air and dropped. I realized I had insulted an intelligent something. I had thrown the gauntlet down to an intelligent whatever. And that really changed my point of view. That really, was a wake-up call for me.
That would have been quite a game changer.
That was really a game changer. Because, see, I had written already by then half a dozen books explaining hauntings as just psychic residue, resident energy, the mind, haunted minds. I mean, I had it all nailed down. I had all the answers. But now this just blew my stack of cards, my house of cards, completely apart. I had to revise very much my point of view.
And you don't think there was any possibility of being psychokinetic energy on the part of somebody there?
I think that's a very interesting question, because if we get into poltergeist a little bit, there was a girl just entering puberty in the house.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, I think it's interesting because I don't think, okay, I think she in some way was interacting with the haunting phenomena that was already there.
Or perhaps augmenting it.
Yeah, or somehow, because she would shout out things like, here comes the man with the beard, here comes the terrible man with the beard, which we could not see.
Mm-hmm.
And she would report several things that were taking place that she said she could see. But it wasn't the type of poltergeist, because I've had another poltergeist case where the objects, you know, would be directly, they would strike, but not hurtful, the center. Here again, a young woman, and as you know, not to be sexist in any way, but poltergeists do affect young women entering that incredible melange of hormones that the way women undergo.
Yep, puberty, yep.
So I think in some way, you see, I think when you have a haunting that has taken residence, an intelligence, whatever it is, call it a demon, call it whatever fits in your cosmology. I think when that is in a house and then there's a young woman with puberty. Now, the interesting thing in this other home, here again, murders have taken place. But this young woman, she would leave. Let me back up a little bit. This is case number two I'm talking about, so we don't confuse them. So in case number two, this was a mansion. This was a huge mansion. And the entire family lived in the kitchen, in the living room downstairs. All the rest of the house.
Wow. That's making quite a statement.
Yeah, because they wouldn't go in there. Because,
yeah, wow.
Because of the haunting manifestations. That's why we were called in. But the only person who lived upstairs was the teenage girl. She didn't, at first, she said she would go to school, she'd come home, and she'd, of course, being fastidious, she would make up her room before she left, she'd put her curlers in place, she had everything in place. She would come home, and everything in her room would be scattered all over the place. So she realized, and I don't know what gave her this insight, but she left her room a mess. She came to leave her room a mess, and when she got home, everything was picked up in an order.
Well, that's the way you do it, right, chair.
Yeah. How to put a poltergeist to work for you.
That's
I need
right.
to introduce that poltergeist to my two teenage boys, Brad. He needs to come over to my house. We'll find room for him.
God, that's amazing.
You shouldn't always, what is this about, you shouldn't always ask, you might get what
you wish for. Because
you
might get what you wish for, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to burn some sage, so I'll be.
Okay. I don't think you really want the poltergeist coming to you.
No, I was just kidding.
So you've done work in the UFO field as well.
Yes, yes.
Here's a question in chat room from Mike, who's with Paranexus. Do you think that the ghost research field and the UFO research field overlaps?
Oh, I do. I've written many books on that subject, including one classic that's about to be re-released. I was the black sheep in the UFO field beginning in probably early 70s because I said, this is the same thing I was investigating. Mm-hmm. So I think it has nothing. People don't know, say, well, don't you believe there could be life in outer space? I don't think the two necessarily go together. There may be visitors from outer space, but I think 95% of what we're investigating is psychic phenomena or the paranormal or what has been with us for centuries. because it back in the 60s, the first book I wrote was all nuts and bolts, just as nuts and bolts as anyone, because that's what we believed then. We wanted to believe it. We wanted to believe it, that there was contact. But then I went from state to state. I was fortunate enough to have some friends who were in the flying farmers who would fly me places. I had friends who had been fighter pilots in Korea, and they would fly me places. We'd be right on the scene to investigate. And I thought, this sounds like the same thing I was talking in the spiritualist camp. This sounds like I'm talking to mediums here. I mean, do people come from outer space and say the same thing that you can hear when you sit in the spiritualist camp? Is this what they come to tell us? It started falling apart for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the paranormal that would occur. I saw how things could follow you back. Things could mess up your hotel room. You'd check into a hotel at random and find someone had already registered for you. You'd be walking down the sidewalk, and the phone would ring. It's just a phone. But that was before cell phones. You know, there was a pay phone on every block. And in curiosity, you'd pick it up, and it would be for you in Chicago, you know. All these things, and I'm thinking, this is why they've come from Alpha Centauri, is to play all these kind of weird jokes on us. This is what you get from poltergeist. This is what you get from the paranormal. This is what you get from psychic phenomena.
Well, I think the commonality there is deception. Deception, that seems to be the biggest part of the whole thing. Or maybe deception is too strong a word, but it's almost like a mischievous tease all the time. This tantalizing snippets.
Grant, I started with deception. And I still say deception, but I say maybe it's also a teaching mechanism.
Could very well be.
But then we have to decide, and this is where we come in, which is it? And I quite agree with you.
But that's the conundrum. And I mean, all the great philosophers of all time would quite frequently, as both of you gentlemen know, would pose questions as opposed to providing their students or their mentors or whoever they're trying to instruct with the answer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the theme of my Gods of Aquarius, UFOs and the Transformation of Man, is these are the questions that we have to answer. And that book, I'm so pleased, that book is being re-released just very soon now with some updated material and so forth.
And say the name again, Brad, and where people can get it.
Keep checking the website. Our www.bradandsherry.com, and that's spelled A-N-D and Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-Y. I think you guys already have it linked on your website.
Yeah, I'm going to put it in the chat room.
I thank you for that very much. Just keep checking there. It's Gods of Aquarius, UFOs and the Transformation of Man. I should have said humankind, but this was written in the 70s.
Yeah, different era.
Yeah,
before the feminists had influenced editorial content.
That's one of the, seems to be one of the themes of, when you look at the crop circles over there, I always think of, there we're posed with the puzzle again, because I don't believe that two guys over there, with a board did that. And you know what? We can't even communicate with dolphins effectively, or chimpanzees. We haven't developed yet. So, when we're presented with some form of communication and we don't have a clue how to interpret it, I mean, that's really heavy duty stuff. And I think that some of those crop circles, personally, may be some form of contact with us in terms of trying to communicate.
It's very interesting. I just got a, and I know you do too, but I just got a whole batch of crop circles recently. You guys did too, I'm sure.
Iowa?
No, this is from jolly old Wiltshire, England again. It seems it's kind of like a starting point, and these were scattered all over. But I received them from some very interesting people. Some, you know, pure researchers, some fundamental Christians. They're seeing different things, but I think here again, and you guys know this, you know that crop circles have been with us. They used to call it the crop devil.
Fairy circles and...
The fairy circles. They've been in Japan, ancient Europe. This has been with us for centuries. And it's interesting, but like you say, to have... bless their heart, because I'm a senior citizen myself now, but believe me, I'm not going out and troop down with a board and a measuring string. And certainly here in Iowa, I don't think there's a farmer who would let you go out and stalk your field. I mean, this is a cash crop for someone. This is like breaking into a supermarket and arranging, you know, all the hot dogs in a supermarket.
It is stealing.
So whoever is doing it has to be feeling absolved from any type of guilt, feeling that what they're doing is worthwhile and needs to be shared with other humans or with humans.
And the thing about it is if it's a non-human intelligence trying to communicate with us, the thing that I find so striking about it, I won't even rule out the fact that there's been some very clever people who have committed fraud. But
of
by the
course.
Same token, when you see the precision in some of those designs, the geometric patterns, some things that mimic fractal geometry, that kind of stuff, is really hard. It's hard for me to say that two very clever college students went out there in the middle of the night with no other lead trails going in and did that, because you know darn well if they're out there, they're going to be doing it as quick as they possibly can. And when that happens, you've got to throw out precision.
And especially after it's been done once. You know, every farmer in the area is sitting there with his shotgun watching for those down. I mean, you know, like you say, this is stealing. This is defacing someone else's property. So I have people who, you know, write and say they've seen light drifting over small luminous orbs and so forth. I mean, it's a great mystery. It truly is.
Well, you know, the thing that I think is, Doug and I have talked about this many times, and we've talked about it on the show, is that if you're serious about doing this research, and I think you spoke to it so eloquently, was the fact that you must evolve. You can't come into it, because I think Doug and I, you know, share the same similar. We came in the same way, and that as time went on, we saw this was a multifaceted phenomenon that, you know, you just can't, you know, throw a dart at it, and it's going to fall right on the bullseye with us. And so you have to keep evolving. And I think that's the nature of any good science, not to stay in one place, because if you get stuck, then you can't be open-minded.
No, you know, right now we have a double-edged sword, which the older I get, I see how many double-edged swords we have in life. But, you know, we have this wonderful internet where there are bright guys like you, and I say that because you agree with everything I say, and I agree with everything you say, so therefore...
Of course.
Brad, we couldn't have done it any other way.
Yeah.
We have a mutual admiration society. However, my good friends, we know as we cross the internet, we see people who are putting down, and they can now, they can do without any supervision, without any editorial guidance at all, put down any theory that they want and be considered experts. They're experts if they've watched a couple dramatizations on History Channel.
Yep.
And I know I'm cautious there. These are all supposed to be true on History Channel, so I shouldn't say dramatizations, but, you know, sometimes you wonder.
They always have one.
You embellished a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. And I know Jason and Grant, I know they spend more hours there than the sudden hour will be happening. I know they go lots of places and nothing happens. So, but what we have is people becoming instant experts. Now, that's one thing, because you do, you, like you say, I just heard you read at the beginning of this program all the things that you were doing with your group, and it all sounded very good to me, and it sounds like you are cautious, and it sounds like you really do try to work with integrity, and I,
mm-hmm.
I
absolutely
I'd love to hear that, because you know, to many people, it's, and I'm sorry to say this, but so often I hear from people, and I think it's the equivalent of the kids getting together after the football game on Friday night playing the Ouija board.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think, oh, let's go to a haunted house tonight and troop through. And a couple, rightfully so, have been arrested for trespassing because not everyone wants people trooping through their empty houses that they still own and so forth.
And you know, I was just going to say,
We have to evolve.
And, you know, the other thing is, too, is that we have to have some ethical guidelines that we follow, because the danger of people going in and doing more harm than good is the possibility is out there. Now, we've experienced that in our investigations where people have come into a home and told the residents in the home that you got an evil spirit here, or you know, and we got to take off now. We can't help you, and that leaves them in quite the predicament. You know, that's not good for anybody.
No.
So you really have to be ethical.
You certainly do. Certainly, ethics, but again, trying to impose that is just I don't know, way back in ancient times in the 60s when I was living in Chicago. Some of the finest mediums and researchers in the world were living there, were attracted there, came from Europe to study there for times, had really fascinating group of psychical researchers and mediums and psychics. And at that time, they tried to draw up a code of ethics, and it just becomes so difficult. You really have to go back on just personal integrity, your personal conscience, and just being really deliberate and respectful about your work and what you're doing, and recognizing that you're working with other human beings, some who are highly suggestible, as you just said a moment ago, to come in and say, my God, there's a demon in here. You know, that's not going to help anybody in here, but some people do that. And then they have their little exorcisms. Now, sometimes you have to do some kind of cleansing. You truly do.
Sure.
But you know, you have to evaluate that. That can't be done just in a slipshod manner. It can't be done. It has to always be done with respect, both for the humans and both for the humans you can't see anymore, the invisible entities. And are these entities, were they once human, or are these beings from other dimensions? We have a multidimensional universe. We have a multi-universe. We have universe of sight and sound and complexities within complexities. Maybe we have 11 or 12 possible realities, because scientists who laughed at that when I was a kid, and that's from the pulp magazines, are now seriously investigating multidimensional interaction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Brad, I don't think I'm too much younger than you. Who would have, as kids, if somebody would have told us there may be life on Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter, we would have laughed our heads off. When we grew up, it was either Venus or Mars, and those planets out there, it was absolutely impossible. Who would have thought that water was ubiquitous out there? You know, never, not in our day, we wouldn't have thought that. No scientist worth his weight would have even gone out on a limb to say something like that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It was always Venus or Mars. And, of course, there's a logic to that. And as I've theorized, and you would probably pick up exactly what I'm saying, we might be Martians.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, perhaps, who can say? that's where we as a life form began, because we know these spores have drifted through space, and we know so many million years ago those spores begin to take form. I just saw in the new science news that maybe we're all descended from this giant spore that they found in this pond. And if that's our great mother, but who can say? We did begin life forms from, drifting from the stars.
Go ahead.
We say in our book, Starborn, that we are all star stuff. We've all come from the stars. That is our very nature, and that's why we are longingly looking up at the stars every night. That's what we know, where we've originated.
And I think that the whole idea, remember where panspermia was completely, scientists wouldn't even go there. They thought that was the most ridiculous theory, and that no conventional scientist would even, take it into consideration. And now you look at, they found meteorites with amino acids on it, water, and I think it's very comforting, the thought of panspermia, that we're all being constant, like a microcosm would be the ocean, with millions and millions of plankton in it, and everywhere just tons of life.
Well, one of the chief proponents of panspermia is the same gentleman who shares the Nobel Prize for discovering DNA. So that should tell us.
Here's a question from the chat room. We were talking a few minutes ago, or alluding to belief and different things. Grant and I have talked about that a lot on this program, how a client's beliefs will affect the phenomena. And so Mike asked, in your research, have you found that according to clients' beliefs, that their reports range from perhaps demons to aliens? And what do you think the entities really are that they're reporting? In other words, are they the same thing, just called different things? What's your take on that?
I hate to sound like a commercial, but...
No, go ahead. That's what this is for.
A couple of our new books, one out Sherry and I wrote on real angels, and we expand the definition of angel, I think, as far as we could go, and probably farther than a lot of people would like us to go, of what constitutes a benevolent being and what is a fallen angel and how all of this works. Certainly belief, I have found, influences it so much. I mean, I've come to houses where people are weeping and hiding and feeling, please, please help us. And then others who regard it as a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you remember when Sixth Sense came out, and we were all saying, I see dead people. I had so many parents write to me and say, I want my child to see dead people. Will you teach me how to
see
dead
people?
And I said, no. That's not the way it works. No, I'm serious. People would get angry at me because I said, you don't encourage your child to talk to dead people. I mean, having grown
strangers.
Up being one of those kids, you don't want to be... It brings you nothing as a child but ridicule and mockery from other children. And believe me, if the child, I encouraged the same parents, I said, now, if your child is doing this naturally, don't mock him, don't ridicule him, be patient, be kind, let it develop, but don't encourage it. Because there are all kinds of astral masqueraders just standing on the edge of reality, just waiting to step in and say, I'm an angel, I'm a good guy, follow me. And that's the person, the entity that you better really ask to see the credentials first.
It's like the guy with the candy. Hey, little girl, little boy, you want some candy?
This is the cosmic candy they hand out, so you have to be careful, very cautious with your children.
Well, you know, it just seems the more I've gotten into everything that is unusual or anomalous, the more wonderful and the more elaborate the tapestry is. And I find it absolutely intriguing and at the same time comforting, because it, regardless of the phenomena, if we all share this together, we're all part of a greater whole.
That's it. You just wrapped up my creed right there.
So these entities that are out there, are they energy entities, dimensional entities, or all of the above?
All of the above. That's why we have to be so cautious. That's why none of us can feel arrogant. That's why none of us say, I have all the answers. No, yeah. I should point out, you see, when I began writing, you know, there was only Hans Holzer, Ruth Montgomery, who else? Maybe a couple others and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, there wasn't many points of view expressed. It was when I really got out in the field and really got out and opened my mind to other possibilities. I had read all the classics from, you know, the great psychical researchers, the British Psychic Society for Psychical Research. I'd been to spiritualist camps. I'd done all of those things. And I had seen a dogmatism building up, but I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't aware that I was becoming dogmatic, that a ghost had to do this, a ghost had to do that. It's when I freed myself from a dogmatism and just approached everything with an openness, respecting everything for what it may be, respecting everything for what it might teach me, respecting everything for what it might disclose, and recognizing that everything is an individual mystical experience that we should learn how to understand. It's like going on a vision quest. You go on a vision quest, you come back to the tribe, and you tell the elders the marvelous vision that you've received. Now, the elders may say, brother, that is a beautiful vision, but it is meant for you alone, not for the tribe. It is for you. Now, that's what we have to learn as psychical researchers. We may have this mystical experiences that are profound, but maybe that was just for us. It may not have been for the entire tribe, and we shouldn't insist that everyone accept it. We shouldn't create a new dogmatism for people to follow.
That was good.
Amen. Amen to that.
Yes, definitely amen. You know, it's obvious that you've been around the block a time or two in this field and have come to these conclusions. And I will tell you, Brad, you know, somebody of your experience, I will admit that I feel some level of validation, because, you know, Grant and I and Paranexus and those involved in creating it feel the same. You know, we understand that it's not what you might see on some dramatic show or in some book. There's a whole different side to the real paranormal world. And another thing that we had kind of come to, at least on our own, and not that other people, I mean, obviously other people have, you and many others, but the correlation between ufology and parapsychology and the whole thing, it's like it's all the same thing, only different.
It's all one.
Yeah, and yet that's almost like, you know, sacrilegious in some circles.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
You know, yeah. Been there, done that one. Yeah,
well,
so
it was interesting, as I said, in probably 72, I mean, I was just the outcast in the whole UFO field, and now there are many, many people who are recognizing at least the paranormal aspects of ufology.
And you know, I think that I'm also a big fan of Jacques Vallée, and I think he pointed that out in Masters of Deception too, that, you know, maybe this is a phenomenon like you talked about earlier, Brad, that's been with us. Maybe it has nothing to do with anything extraterrestrial and everything to do with terrestrial. Maybe this
right.
is some sort of entities or whatever you want to label them that we've cohabitated this planet with for millions of years.
Before we stood upright. Before
yeah.
we stood upright.
Yeah.
They could be our multidimensional cousins with whom we share this sphere.
Mm-hmm. Possibly our overlords. Who knows?
Who knows?
Amazing.
Overlords always kind of sends a little shiver up.
Yeah,
the back.
Really. Overlord this.
Well, yeah, right. It's almost like, you know, anything goes when you get to a certain point.
All right.
Well, we have to, but that's the, on my website, on our website, Sherry, my website. I was asked several years ago to come up with my theory, give my theory of UFOs. Well, the best I could do was come up with 17 theories of UFOs. I have them on the website, and you can examine them.
Bradandsherry.com.
Bradandsherry.com.
Now, we just got just a short few minutes left. In all of your experience, what would you recommend? What kind of advice would you give to other paranormal investigators to help them to do better, to enhance their research? What would you offer?
Well, I think I kind of said it a moment ago, is to go forward with respect for yourself, respect for others. Never stop learning. Never stop seeking. Remain a student. Never feel that, you know, you've graduated. We're here to learn, we're here to grow, and we're here to help others. And I think if we keep that in mind, then that will help us retain our dignity and our integrity.
Well put. And yeah, we have had shows on that, how important it is for one's self-concept to be intact when you do this kind of thing, when you research this stuff. It's like the foundation. You know, if you go out, people who go out with low self-concept, no self-concept, it's just not a good thing. You need to know who you are before you could go out and find out who they are. And I appreciate your words very much. Now,
well, thank you. Now, I'll just add one little tiny warning. That many researchers have found, and perhaps you have too, is there are intelligences there, and they can prey on your weaknesses.
Amen.
So you must, of all things, that ancient maxim, know yourself. You have to know yourself.
Yep.
As the night follows the day, thou canst not be false to another man. Something like that. Doesn't it go,
that's
Brad?
That's it.
We're not worthy. We're not worthy. Okay. You're doing good. All right. Just got a couple of minutes left. It's been an incredible interview. One of my favorites. I just good stuff. So please, to our listeners and those who are listening to this archive, go to bradandsherry.com, bradandsherry.com. The link is on Paranexus in the archives. You can also listen to the archive after the live show is finished there. And just a couple of closing comments. One thing I did forget, I had too many things in the opening, but I wanted to let everybody know that the new Journal of Anomalous Sciences is out. It's on paranexus.org. And I've got to tell you, Yari Mikola, who co-founded Paranexus and is now doing that journal, I honestly have never seen a finer journal anywhere. It's amazing what this guy can do. And in fact, Yari's going to be on with us next week, and we're going to be talking about bringing the anomalous sciences into the mainstream. So go take a look at the Journal of Anomalous Sciences. It's on paranexus.org, and take a look at the rest of the stuff that we offer there as well. Brad, thank you so much for taking your time tonight. It's been an honor.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Many blessings to all.
And thank you so very much for the contribution you've made to the field, and we encourage everybody to if they're not familiar with your many works, to by all means do so, because it's a real pleasure and you can learn a lot.
Yes, indeed. And if you'll hang with us just a moment, and to our listeners, we really appreciate your time as well, and we wish you our very best in all your research. And until next week, have a great night. Good night.
And goodbye to all of our friends down under. Everybody have a great weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
It's Paramex's universe.